Probably have Fan Xiang on a jet to Moscow.
Court rubbed his temples.
No, if your men had not gone in, I would have captured Shamroon, and by now Fan Xiang would be dead.
I could not take that chance.
Court said, it doesn't matter. I have a new lead on where Fan is located.
Tell me.
Court hesitated.
It might not bother you that everywhere your people go there is a massacre, but I'm not going to be a contributor to it. I'm going after Fan on my own. I'll kill him, and then I will contact you. It should have been this way from the start. Your people are only good at slaughtering. They lack the precision they need for this job.
You are forgetting that Sir Donald Fitzroy is with me. What if I decide your insubordinate attitude will cost your old boss a few more of his appendages?
Court said, then I won't know about it because I'm hanging up now. I will call you back when I have taken care of Fan.
Gentry!
Dai shouted into the phone. But Court heard nothing else, because he did as he said he'd do and hung up the phone. He wasn't certain this was the right move. The colonel was crazy enough to kill on principle. But by not giving him an audience, Court deprived him of any real benefit he would get from killing or injuring Fitzroy. Now Court just had to put that out of his mind and get back to his operation. Zoya Zakharova had spent the last 10 minutes going through the backpack of the American who called himself Bob. Along with the knives she had with her pack, he'd taken both guns with him to make his call, so she wasn't looking for weapons, but she wanted to get any intel she could from the equipment he carried. The bag was stuffed with phones, basic surveillance and first aid gear, and clothing. Eventually, she pulled out a black Mont Blanc pen and looked it over, because it was different from the other items in the pack. It looked authentic on the outside, but it didn't match with the other items the man carried with him. His watch was an obvious fake. His pack, his belt, his shoes, they were all just average, nothing she would ever notice. So why was he walking around with such a fancy writing instrument? As she suspected, it wasn't just a pen. While it had a nib with ink in it, when she took the cap off and turned the base, the nib slid out of the way, exposing a hollow-looking tube. At the end of this was a CO2 cartridge and a small clear vial of dark gray powder. There was some tiny writing on the side of the tube, and Zoya had to move it into the bright lights of the bathroom to even see it. When she could finally make it out, she realized she couldn't read it. It appeared to be in Chinese. It had been well disguised, but Zoya wasn't fooled. She knew exactly what it was. She'd seen scopolamine hydrobromide blowguns before in books, but never in real life, and never housed in a Mont Blanc pen. Russian intelligence had used scopolamine hydrobromide back in the KGB days. She remembered studying it in her training at SVR, and while the Russians had moved on to other truth serums, she knew the Chinese still used devil's breath as a relatively effective interrogation enhancement.
The Chinese? Where did the American get this?
She almost slipped the pen in her pocket to use as a defensive weapon if it came down to it, but she decided the American was too smart to allow her to be up here with his gear all this time, without taking an inventory when he returned. She put everything back in the pack exactly the way she found it, and then she lay back on the bed and closed her eyes. The American still might have been playing her. She hadn't worked that out yet. But she certainly could not argue with his logic. Zoya couldn't take Fan back to Russia without getting herself thrown in prison, or worse, for the killing of Oleg Utkin. She'd no doubt take the fall for the destruction of the Zaslan team as well, regardless of whether Vasily and Ruslan survived and spoke up in her defense. No, she wasn't going back to Russia. And while the American seemed to be reticent about some information, clearly he was keeping pertinent details of his operation from her, he also seemed to be one of the most sincere people she'd ever met. His willingness to partner with her based on a gut feeling was something she was completely unaccustomed to. But still, this man must have some angle here, some ulterior motive she hadn't yet worked out. Zoya had the clarity to realize that her mistrust of the American was not based on him at all. No, it was based on her experiences, on her relationships in the past, both professional and personal. Other than her older brother, Fyodor, she had never in her life known a man who had earned both her trust and her love. She had loved her father. He had done his best. But she had known most of her childhood that she could only trust her father to live for his work. Her father had done just that, and then he had died. Her brother Fyodor had been the one man different from all the others, and Fyodor was dead as well. This calm but dangerous American had done everything humanly possible in the past few hours to prove himself to her. He'd saved her life, jeopardizing his mission. He'd asked for her help instead of taking the information from her that he needed. And he'd told her the truth when he could easily have lied. If he had ulterior motives in all this, at least related to her, she was unable to identify them so far, and she prided herself on her skill at sniffing out the schemes of others. Still, she'd keep an eye on this man, fully expecting the other shoe to drop. And just as she told herself this, she heard the key card in the door. Court Gentry returned to the suite and entered as quietly as he could, expecting that the Russian woman might have nodded off to sleep. As he stepped lightly into the bedroom, he found her on the bed, but her eyes were open, looking back at him.
"Everything go okay with your conversation?"
"Fine. I thought you'd be sleeping."
"I wasn't sure if you'd come back. Now that I've given you my intel, I wondered if you would just leave your pack behind, then drive to Phuket."
Court shook his head.
"I want you right where I can see you. If I left you behind, I expect I'd bump into you in Phuket anyway. We have the same objective, and if there's one thing we've learned in the past couple of weeks, it's that working against each other doesn't seem to turn out so great for either of us. I beat you in Vietnam, you beat me here."
She said,
"Okay, Bob. I guess now it will be you and me against the world."
There was sarcasm dripping off the comment, but Court just smiled and hefted his pack. Zoya climbed to her feet and grabbed her own bag, and soon they were heading for the car. Chapter 48 Zoya and Court drove through a perfectly sunny day along Petkesem Road, which ran north to south from the capital all the way to the Malaysian border. They took turns resting and driving, but for large swaths of the trip they were both awake. The conversation was stilted. Both of them were tired despite catching a little rest, but the main impediment to their new relationship was the fact that neither was very experienced in opening up to others, especially others affiliated with foreign intelligence services. 6 hours into the drive, Court was behind the wheel, and he decided he'd try to probe a little, if only just to help him stay awake. Zoya sat with her knees to her chest and her chin resting on them. She looked out the window, bored.
Court said, "I know I'm not going to get too much out of you regarding your past, but I have to ask. Your English is the best I've ever heard from a Russian. Where did you learn?"
"In school,"
Zoya replied, and she left it there.
"You say phrases that are uniquely American. A lot of Europeans are trained in British English, but not you."
"I watched TV. We had a lot of shows from America."
Court didn't believe her, and he sighed in frustration. Upon hearing this, Zoya said,
"Tell me about your Russian. Where did you learn that?"
Court had learned in the CIA, mostly on the job, and he sure as hell wasn't going to say that, even though he figured she'd be able to guess. After a few seconds, he said,
"You made your point."
They drove along in silence for a few more seconds, and then he tried something else.
"I saw you climb the side of that villa the other night. That was pretty impressive. Were you in the circus when you were a kid?"
"As a matter of fact, I was."
"Seriously, you were like a damn spider monkey."
"Thanks, I guess."
Court waited for the real story, but it never came. She'd had some sort of advanced training, perhaps even paramilitary training, and she'd maintained her skill through either more training or real-world ops. He didn't call her out, and he didn't push her. He just said,
"It's going to be a long drive, isn't it?"
She turned to him.
"What kind of music do you like?"
Court shrugged.
"Stuff you won't find on the radio in the backcountry of Thailand."
Zoya nodded.
"Then yes, it's going to be a long drive."
Delayed by a flat tire and a traffic accident that backed up the two-lane highway for miles, the Toyota Vios finally crossed the bridge that brought them onto Phuket Island at 10 p.m. local time. Court and Zoya stopped for dinner at the first restaurant they found. Court chose Khao Niao Mu Ping, pork skewers and rice, while Zoya proved herself to be the braver of the pair by ordering Tom Lad Mu, a soup made from pork intestines and lungs and flavored with Thai chilies. They then drove to the Trisara Phuket, a 5-star resort in the Thalang district on the northern side of the island with a view of the Andaman Sea, part of the Indian Ocean. They checked in for 3 nights, and Court used the passport delivered to him in Bangkok by the CIA station that claimed his name was Chad Waverly. When the man at the hotel reception asked for Zoya's passport, she rolled her eyes, leaned onto the desk, and gave a tired smile. She told the hotel employee her name was Whitney Waverly, she was Chad's wife, and in what Court thought was an incredibly convincing Chicago accent, she explained that her purse had been stolen in Bangkok and, so far, the U.S. Embassy had been absolutely freaking worthless in helping her get a replacement passport. Court couldn't help but stare in awe at her Oscar-worthy performance. Zoya sold her legend completely, and soon they were on their way to their Ocean View suite. As they walked, Court said,
"You grew up in the States."
It wasn't a question.
"No,"
she said. Her Chicago accent was gone, again replaced by just the faintest Russian accent.
"You're gonna tell me you learned that watching TV back on the collective farm?"
"Collective farm? I grew up in a house, same as you, I guess. Running water, indoor plumbing, almost like a real person."
Court was egging her on, trying to get information.
"Yeah, well, I hope my Russian sounds half as convincing as your English does."
"Say something in Russian and I'll let you know."
Court switched to Russian and made up a quick story that mirrored hers, claiming his name to be Ivan Ivanovic, saying he was from St. Petersburg and he accidentally spilled caviar on his passport. Zoya just rolled her eyes, and when he was finished, she said,
"You want the truth or do you want me to be nice?"
"I'm tired. I'll take nice."
"You sound like a Russian with a head injury and a speech impediment."
"Jesus, what if I said I wanted the truth?"
"Then I would have said you sounded like an American with a head injury and a speech impediment speaking bad Russian."
Court knew his Russian was better than that. He couldn't pass as a native speaker, but he could carry on conversations without too much trouble. Still, with her skill in languages, it was no surprise she was a tough critic.
"Why did I ever marry you, Whitney?"
he joked. Zoya did not miss a beat.
"Must have been the head injury, Chad."
Court and Zoya toured around their well-appointed Ocean View suite, then went out on the patio off the bedroom and looked past the private infinity pool to the beach and the Andaman Sea. To the east, the lights of several large private villas owned by the resort lay sprawled along a green hillside, and beyond them the hills turned into thick jungle. The Shamroon property was out there, just off to the east, and the resort afforded two Westerners the perfect reason to be here in the first place. This was one of the most luxurious and romantic destinations in Thailand, after all, so no one would doubt that a young couple of means from the States might be walking around here, swimming in the ocean, or hiking the nearby jungle trails. They'd have to do everything as a couple, but they were both pros, and they could adopt their aliases easily. Court surveyed the opulent grounds with his binoculars from his patio, and he knew right about now Suzanne Brewer would be sitting in her office looking at an American Express charge that would make her blood boil. Back inside, he found the woman who now called herself Whitney adjusting the stereo, finding a New Age station, and turning the volume up on some atmospheric music that made Court think the Russian woman was about to start doing yoga on the floor. She then went into the bathroom and turned on the water in the tub, then returned to Court and took him by the arm out to the patio. He'd expected her tradecraft to be as practiced as his own, but he was fascinated to watch her. She did things much as he did, and as a singleton operative, he found it strange to see someone else virtually mimicking his way of functioning in the field. She said,
"We can see Shamroon's property from the beach to the east of here."
Court said,
"We have to allow for the fact that Shamroon has informants at this resort. If he is running a criminal organization the size and scope of this syndicate, it would be foolish to leave this hotel next to his estate as a blind spot in his security setup."
"I agree," Zoya said. "And if anyone here at the hotel has their eyes on us, our going up the beach with binoculars right now, just after arriving, is going to look suspicious," she added. "Our clothes will look strange, too. I don't have anything for a beach vacation, but there is a boutique off the lobby I saw on the way in."
The image of Suzanne Brewer looking at more of Chad Waverly's Amex charges, especially charges that included women's beachwear, gave Court a brief moment's pleasure.
He said, "First thing tomorrow morning, we'll get some suitable clothes, and we'll do some exploring. For now, we get some sleep."
Zoya said,
"Okay."
She looked uncomfortable for a moment, and Court thought he understood. He said,
"You take the bed. This will seem strange, but when I am operational, I usually sleep in the closet."
I sleep in the closet too, she said.
Court continued to be amazed her tradecraft so closely matched his own.
Zoya added, But there is just the one closet.
No problem, Court said. I'll take the floor on the far side of the bed, and the pistols. That will make me feel a little safer.
You won't give me one of the guns?
Court shook his head.
Not even one of the knives. Sorry, Banshee. I like you, but I'm a shitty judge of character. I've liked people in the past who've tried to kill me.
They both slept hard and woke up early the next morning, and after breakfast they went for a walk along the beach to the east that took them to the area below the Shamroon estate, high on the cliffs. The helipad was just south of the home, which meant if there was a helicopter there, they should have been able to see it from where they walked, but they saw nothing but a mansion surrounded by a low wall. They returned to the hotel lobby and the boutique there, and, fortunately for both of them, they were able to outfit themselves with clothes that would help them fit in on the beach or hiking through the jungle. Zoya made a joke about Chad's company paying for their trip, the insinuation being that she knew the CIA was footing the bill. But Court didn't go for the bait and say anything more about his relationship with the agency. By the early afternoon, they'd hiked all over the area around the resort to get their bearings. The Shamroon estate was massive and walled, but just guarded with a couple of gatehouses, a few patrolling guards, and a couple of jeeps with young men sitting in them. Also, as had been the case in Vietnam, the local police presence seemed to be watching over the estate, as both Court and Zoya had noticed the occasional patrol car rolling by. They rented kayaks in the late afternoon and looked at the area from a few hundred yards offshore, and while Zoya and Court agreed that the facility seemed well protected, neither of them had a baseline on the guard setup to compare against, so they couldn't say whether Phan Xiang and Kulap Shamroon were inside. It might have just been the case that the hardy security situation was common for the property, or that the boss was expected in the next day or two. They agreed they would not breach the property until Kulap's helicopter arrived, or they had some other indicator of an increased security profile around the area. They decided they'd rent a boat and diving equipment the following morning, then take a picnic lunch to a small island just offshore of the estate. There, they would be able to use their optics to get a decent look around the area, and possibly even inside windows of the building. Court and Zoya had worked well together all day, and Court found that Zoya's earlier reluctance to open up to him was slowly giving way. She'd mentioned she'd enjoyed boating as a child, and she talked about some of the upper body exercises she did to keep in shape. She also gave Court some insights into her ability to disguise herself with wigs, changes to her eyes, and foreign accents. It wasn't much, and it was positively wooden for two people who were supposed to be married, but Court found himself hanging on every word Banshee said that didn't have to do with the operation. Moving around the resort all day meant they attracted the notice of the hotel staff, so they decided that for their second evening here they would need to do something in keeping with their legends. They both agreed dinner and drinks out among the other guests would help bolster their cover for status. They went to the bar for a drink at sunset, dressed casually but neatly, just like everyone else here at the stylish lounge with the views of the sea. There were several other couples and even a few families sitting around, and the two intelligence officers made small talk with others around the bar when spoken to. A South African family regaled them about their travels, and a British couple in their 50s, enjoying a second honeymoon, talked about the great diving in the area. They even met a couple from Chicago at the bar, and since Zoya had already committed to a cover claiming to be from their city, they asked her questions that would have made Court squirm if he were in her shoes. But she answered confidently, and the other couple clearly bought into her legend in full. Court was glad to see that he and the Russian woman had established their bona fides, because he identified one of the two bartenders as a potential informant. The man asked a lot of questions of the foreign guests, Court and Zoya included, and he seemed to be listening into the conversations of all the English speakers. Court assumed the man was in the employ of the Shamroon Syndicate, and he had no specific concerns about the American couple, although he might have been ordered to increase his scrutiny in light of what happened two evenings earlier in Bangkok. After their drink, Court and Zoya were led to a romantic table right out on the sandy beach, and here they both made idle chit-chat about the restaurant while their hands felt around under the table and their chairs, subtly, as to not draw any attention to their actions. They both felt confident there were no listening devices present, but only when a band started playing on a riser on the beach nearby did they speak openly. Zoya simply said,
"That bartender."
Court nodded.
"Yep, he's getting paid to snoop into the guests."
"Right, but do you think he's getting paid by the neighbor?"
"I do."
Zoya had been thinking the same thing.
"Pretty sure we satisfied him we were legit."
"You did," Court said. "That was amazing. You really know Chicago."
She shook her head with a smile.
"I've never been."
"I don't believe that for a second."
"I'll prove it. Name any one of the top 25 largest U.S. cities."
Court shrugged.
"Jacksonville."
Her eyes furrowed.
"Okay. Name another."
"Philadelphia."
Zoya slipped effortlessly into her Philly accent, talked about her high school there, and how she wanted to go to Penn State but ended up having to go to Pitt. And then she dropped the name of the street her apartment was on and talked a little about her view of the Delaware River. Court realized he would have been fooled if he'd met her on the street.
"You are so completely full of shit,"
Court said it with an amazed smile on his face. She took this as a compliment.
"Very true. I can do the top cities in the UK, Germany, France, Belgium, and a few other places,"
she added.
"I'm working on Australia as well. UK and Germany are my favorites because people from there don't make you answer 100 questions about your life. I'd never say I was from Dallas or Atlanta, because if I met someone from there, they'd probably try to adopt me and I'd never get away."
Court laughed. He noticed her growing ease in talking to him, which was more than likely helped along by the alcohol. She seemed relaxed in her element here, which was amazing to him considering 48 hours earlier she was in the role of a drug-addled human trafficking victim, and a few days before that, she'd been ninja-ing her way through a gun battle in Vietnam. Court was fascinated by Banshee. He could slip into and out of roles as required by his job, of course, but he'd never been around anyone else who could pull it off. After more wine, she seemed comfortable to a point where Court felt he could finally probe a little more, and when their entrees came, Court took a chance.
"How did you get into this life?"
Zoya sipped her Pinot Noir.
"Is this where you try to break through my tough exterior?"
"No, I tried that yesterday. This is where you see that I'm just making conversation, and you let your walls down just a little."
She smiled, put her glass down, and gave a little shrug.
"Military family. A lot of travel. Other kids in the same situation were always complaining about moving all the time, but I loved it. I got to reinvent myself every couple of years. My identity became tied to my ability to change my identity. I'm weird. This is the perfect job for me."
She looked off towards the dark ocean.
"It was, anyway. I don't know what I will do now."
"Only child?"
She turned with a little smile, but the smile faded, and she looked at him for a long time. Court realized he'd said something wrong. To his surprise, though, she answered, and her answer seemed authentic.
"My older brother passed away when I was young. He was in college, studying to be a doctor."
"How did he die?"
"Natural causes, cancer. 23 years old.
"Christ," Court said. "I'm sorry."
She just sipped more wine with a little nod. Court tried to get her thinking about anything else, so he asked another question.
"You went into the military yourself?"
She shook her head.
"No, something about being 18 and not wanting to give up my freedom."
Court wasn't sure if it was true, but he caught himself believing her.
"But you found another way to serve Russia."
Her eyes narrowed a bit now as she cut into her grilled fish, and Court realized he was asking too many questions. As expected, she turned it around on him.
"Why do you do what you do?"
Court's real story was more complicated than he was willing to share. The truth was, he'd been the son of a police officer and an expert in weaponry who trained CIA officers in firearms tactics. He'd developed incredible skills with guns at a young age. Then, when Court was just 18, he'd had a falling out with his father, and to rebel, he'd slipped into the periphery of the criminal underworld as a bodyguard for a drug dealer in Miami. He'd gone to prison at 19 for killing 3 of his employer's would-be assassins, but the CIA gave him the option of freedom in exchange for working with them.
No,
he wasn't going to go into all that. Instead, he just said,
It's what I was born to do. I don't always like it. Sometimes I hate it. But I don't really question it much anymore.
Remind me to use that answer next time someone like you asks me the same question,
Zoya said coolly. Relax, Whitney. You're still one of the most defensive and unforthcoming people I've ever met.
Likewise, Chand.
They ate in silence for a moment, and Court saw her relaxed mood slipping away quickly. He thought he should reveal something about himself now, if only to keep her from shutting down completely.
I was raised by my dad, a Marine and a cop. My mom died when I was a kid.
Zoya looked him hard in the eyes. After a time, it became clear that she believed him.
My mother died when I was 6. My father died when I was a teenager.
Sorry. You suffered a tremendous amount of loss at a young age.
It made me stronger in some ways.
Court regretted his attempt to refire the conversation. They sat quietly under the torchlights for a while, until they finished their second bottle of wine, and Court called for the check. Chapter 49 They returned to their suite and sat together on their private patio by their private pool, the moonlight the only illumination. Zoya opened a bottle of Australian Shiraz left in the room for them by management, and Court fought a joke about having room service bring a bottle of vodka instead. Court had planned on calling into Brewer tonight. It was late morning at Langley, and he wanted her to know he was still in the process of determining if Fawn was on the adjacent property. But he realized he didn't want to step out of the room now, worried that the Russian woman might be asleep when he returned. Suzanne Brewer would have to sit and stew till tomorrow. They both reclined on deck loungers and sipped wine, and they looked out at the ocean to the southwest. A massive luxury yacht, easily 150 to 200 feet in length, had anchored a mile offshore. Court picked up the binoculars from the table next to him and looked it over. He saw a swimming pool, a helicopter on deck, and a name on the bow. It was the Medusa, with a port of registry in Genoa. He put the binoculars down, then looked to the Russian woman. He could tell she wanted to say something, and he marveled at how comfortable she had become with him in the past day. He attributed it to their shared experiences, and he wondered if she could read him as well as he thought he could read her. He didn't press her to talk, but when she finally did speak, he found himself disappointed that she was thinking about work.
There are things you aren't telling me about this operation.
Court looked out to the reflection of moonlight on the sea.
Yes.
Zoya downed the last of her Shiraz.
Well, at least you are honest. Answer one more thing for me, then I will let it go.
Okay.
The things you aren't telling me, if you were in my position and you found out about them, would you run or would you stay?
Court reached for his glass.
I'd stay, unquestionably. I'm hiding from you how little I know about what's going on here. It's not as cut and dried as I've let on. My country's motivations to get Fawn might be muddier than I am comfortable with.
Then he added,
but I'm not hiding anything about us.
She turned to him.
There is an us?
Court almost spit out his wine.
No, I mean, I'm referring to what we are doing here. Everything I've told you is true, he added. I wouldn't lie to you.
As soon as he said it, he regretted it, not because it was a promise he didn't feel he could keep, but he thought it came out sounding cheap, hollow, fake. After a time, she said,
I think I believe you.
Good.
Zoya said,
there is something I haven't told you.
I'm sure there are a lot of things, Court quipped. I don't even know your name.
No, you don't.
After a long pause, Court said,
this is where you tell me your name.
No, this is where I tell you what I did to make this all happen.
She sat up and put her glass down.
The only reason the Shamroon Syndicate has Fawn in the first place is because I contacted them, in Cambodia. You'd escaped over the border, my task force had been taken away from me, and I needed to somehow get Fawn away from you. I had no other options, so I contacted the first organization I could find who had men near that border. They picked Fawn up and brought him to Thailand. I thought I was the one person who knew where he was, so I could get to him. Then, somehow, you found out, and my former task force found out.
She shook her head.
I have no idea how that happened.
Court answered this. Fan sent a message to Taiwanese intelligence. It was picked up by our side somehow. Maybe that's how the Russians, I mean, your guys, found out.
Zoya said, I didn't account for that possibility.
Don't feel bad. You had a solid plan.
That's all you're going to say?
He waved his glass in the air. It doesn't matter.
Of course it does. I was willing to let Thai gangsters kill you to achieve my mission. You, on the other hand, cast your entire mission aside to rescue me and a bunch of prostitutes who meant nothing to you.
Court said, You were close to me during the firefight, behind a column, but you ran over to the other women, too. You were going to try to save them yourself.
When she did not respond, Court said, Weren't you?
Zoya looked out to sea.
I saw that you had Shamroon. I went over to the women just for cover. I was looking for a gun. I would have shot you if I'd found one.
Well, I am glad things turned out the way they did.
Zoya, still looking into the silvery moonlight, just said, Tell me why you did it. I want to understand.
Court scratched the back of his head. He didn't know how to explain himself, because normally he would have no need to. But for some reason he wanted her to understand, not to justify his actions, but instead to help her, because he could tell she was completely adrift, both as an intelligence officer and as a person.
Occasionally, one is presented with moral questions that are different from the mission itself. I don't like it. I would rather keep things simple. But life gets in the way of the job sometimes. At that spa in Bangkok, in that brief moment, you and those other women were the most important thing. The mission is my job, but sometimes I divert a little for the sake of others.
He smiled now.
Doesn't make me a great guy. It doesn't mean I'm not going to shoot some asshole through the forehead 5 seconds later.
Zoya sighed. I believe in keeping things simple, too. But it is not always possible.
A stray cloud passed in front of the moon, dimming the light on them both. Zoya asked,
Have you ever killed an innocent person?
From the timing and placement of the question, Court realized she was asking it for her own reasons, not really to elicit information from him. Still, he hesitated a long time before answering, and he answered truthfully.
Yes.
Under orders?
Yes.
Does that help, that you were ordered to do it?
Court thought about his answer.
No, not much. Not enough, anyway.
Zoya nodded now, staring deeply into Court's eyes. You and I have so much in common.
I'm very sorry to hear that.
Court said it with sincerity. He stood.
We should try to get some sleep.
Court and Zoya each moved bedding from the king-sized bed as they had the night before. She made a small and neat pallet for herself in the walk-in closet, and Court just tossed a pillow and a blanket on the floor on the far side of the bed from the entrance to the room. After getting ready for bed, they both lay down, 15 feet apart and unable to see each other, but they continued talking across the room. Mostly, they talked about nothing. Every now and then, however, they would discuss some aspect of their plan for the next day. The conversation trailed off, and then picked back up for a few minutes, and it trailed off again. Court lay there in the dark now, gazing around at the room he could see from his position, using the significant moonlight that poured in from the glass door to the balcony. For 10 minutes, he heard only his own breath, his own heartbeat. And then he sat up. He didn't think he had made any noise, but he heard a stirring in the closet almost immediately. He climbed to his feet, and a few seconds later, he heard Zoya rise as well. She whispered,
What is it? You heard something?
Court moved around the bed, closer to her. She stepped out of the closet now, revealing herself in the moonlight. She wore a plain white t-shirt and blue cotton track pants. Her hair was hooked behind her ears, but a little drooped down in her face. She cocked her head, trying to listen for whatever noise caused the American to get up. But the American hadn't been stirred by a noise. He stepped close to her, face to face, close enough to where he could feel the warmth of her body. He put his arms around her and pulled her close to him. He kissed her deeply, and for a brief moment, she kissed him back. Then she pulled away, not out of his grasp, just back a little. With her hands gently on his hips, she looked up at him.
"This isn't keeping things simple,"
Court said.
"It is for me. Doing nothing feels impossible."
Zoya said,
You remind me of someone. I worry that it is affecting my actions."
"Someone good, I hope."
She blinked hard, and Court wondered if she was going to cry. It was certainly not the emotion he'd hoped to elicit from her right now. But she recovered and said,
"Someone very good. Someone so good that it worries me that perhaps I am projecting something onto you, hoping for too much from you. Normally, I have a hard time letting my guard down. It is dangerous to do. But..."
Court held her tight.
"You're safe. Tonight, you're safe."
He kissed her again, and now she brought her hands to the sides of his face, pulled him even closer, and together they stood there in the dark, kissing and touching and breathing each other's air. And then they moved back into the closet, lowered down on the floor, and for now, for tonight, they were both safe. And tomorrow's dangers seemed like they were still far out to sea. Chapter 50 Court woke well before the first light of dawn. The room was darker now than it had been with the evening's moonlight, and here in the closet it was pitch black. But he didn't need to see a thing. He was behind her, with his bare chest against her back and his arms around her naked stomach, and his nose in her hair at the back of her head. He didn't know where his clothes were. He'd have to do an after-action review later to relive the events of the past several hours, just to reassure himself that it had actually happened. Court looked out of the closet, waited for his eyes to adjust to the dim. He found everything still in its place and no new threats in the world, a world that felt very different suddenly. He moved his hand from in front of her to rub his eyes, but she lay still. Returning his hand, he brushed his fingertips across her stomach, feeling her abdominal muscles move as she breathed. He retracted his hand a little to her hip, and he felt warm skin over her hip bone. He stroked up a few inches and stopped. There was something there on the skin on her back, a scar no more than half an inch in diameter. He knew it was a bullet wound instantly, because he had similar marks on his own body. He lingered there, touching it out of curiosity, then realized what an awful thing he was doing, and started to move on, angry at himself. Zoya spoke, and though her voice told Court she'd been sleeping, she displayed neither a hint of shyness nor anger.
"That was a 7.62 round, in and out, 3 years ago. I was wearing body armor, but not side plates. Stupid."
"Side plates suck," Court said.
"Not as bad as getting shot."
"No argument from me."
She added,
"Must have been a ricochet. Didn't even break the ribs."
"Where did this happen?"
"Chechnya."
"I hear that place is a hellhole."
She rolled over to face him, though they couldn't see each other at all in the darkness of the closet.
"Most every place I've been sent is a hellhole."
And with that, she kissed him deeply.
"But it's not so bad right here."
He started to put his hand on her body again, but she clasped his fingers in hers. He thought she'd had enough of his touch, and he was about to apologize, but she surprised him by saying,
"That one is nothing. Feel this."
She placed his hand on her upper back, between her shoulders, and just to the right of her spine. This scar was 3 times the size of the other.
"What happened there?"
"Knife in the back. I pissed a guy off in a bar. If it hadn't hit my vertebra, it would have gone straight into my heart."
"Where did this happen?"
"Can't say."
Court smiled a little.
"How is he doing? The guy you pissed off?"
"Oh, he's really pissed off now."
Court imagined this was an understatement. Now she reached out and put her hand on Court's ribcage, traced the pink gash there. She must have felt it during their lovemaking, because he knew she couldn't see it now. Without prompting, Court said,
9mm. This one didn't break the ribs either, but it took off a lot of meat."
"It's pretty fresh."
"Yes."
"Where did this happen?"
"Can't say."
Who did it?
He paused a moment. Normally, there was no reason for him to tell the truth, but with this woman, he couldn't think of a reason to lie. He said,
Saudis.
Assholes.
These guys were.
They both had other scars, other stories, but the talk of old fights gave way slowly to quiet, to softer touches over untainted skin, and then to new passion. Soon there was no more talking between the two of them, no more past, no more pain. There was just now.
Court figured it was close to 9 a.m. now. He could see her face plainly, even in the closet, and he moved a strand of hair out of her eye and behind her ear. She had been dozing while Court lay there, just thinking, but she woke now, then rose up onto an elbow. Her eyes locked on his. She said,
Zoya, that's my name. Zoya Zakharova.
Court smiled.
Zoya.
It's okay if you don't tell me yours. I just wanted you to know mine.
Court took what she said at face value, and he did not tell her his name. He had been thinking about something else when she spoke, and instead of shifting to follow along with Zoya's train of thought, he said,
Let's say the helicopter comes in today, and we move in to get Fawn. Do you have a plan for after?
Zoya's eyebrows furrowed. Court could not interpret the meaning behind the expression. Finally, she shook her head slowly.
I don't want to jinx today by worrying about tomorrow.
Maybe you could let me think about tomorrow for you.
What do you mean?
He said,
You won't be safe going home, you know that. You won't be safe in a lot of places. SVR has reach, as you know.
She smiled a little, but she'd lost the glow of just a few seconds earlier.
So you are going to protect me?
I can help. I can talk to some people. I'm sure they can bring you into the U.S. You'll be safe there.
You'll talk to people at CIA, you mean?
Court nodded.
They are the ones that can make it happen. I'm sure they'd want to question you, but you can come to some sort of an agreement before you commit to anything.
Court thought his idea was solid, and he thought Zoya would immediately agree it was the best plan, so her response surprised him greatly.
What are you doing?
He cocked his head now.
What do you mean?
Her body language had changed. Her eyes had narrowed precipitously. Even her breathing was different.
Are you trying to recruit me?
Recruit you? No, of course not. I'm not suggesting you work for the agency, just that you use them to get into the U.S. After that, you can do whatever you want.
Zoya said,
Right, and just think about how important you will be at CIA. You capture a Chinese defector and an SVR operative. You can do whatever you want.
Capture? I'm just trying to help. I'm worried about what might happen if...
Sure you are.
She smiled, but Court could plainly see anger in her eyes.
It took me too long, but I finally got you figured out.
Meaning?
When you bugged Oleg's car, you thought you would learn something about Fawn, but instead you heard an SVR compromise herself permanently to her organization. You knew I'd be desperate, ready to cling to any lifeline, and you came right in, tricked me by appealing to my sense of the mission. You brought me along to go after Fawn, but from the beginning, this was about getting me into the U.S., just like Fawn. The last 2 days have just been to set the trap.
She sat up now, climbed out of the closet, pulled on warm-ups and a t-shirt from her bag. She stormed out of the closet, leaving Court there, staring at the ceiling. Court was utterly gobsmacked. He truly had no idea how to respond. Finally, he just said,
For God's sake, that's ridiculous.
Zoya reappeared back over him a few seconds later.
Is it? Do I have it all wrong?
Yes, you do. I'm just trying to help.
Zoya lowered back down, straddling Court now. He looked at her in confusion for an instant, but he kept his hands down.
What are you?
She interrupted him.
I'm sorry. As I told you, I have trust issues.
His guard rose quickly, but not quickly enough. Zoya held the Mont Blanc pen up into his face, pointing it right at his nose. She depressed the trigger, and the charger exploded in his face with a solid pop. But nothing came out. She pulled the pen away slowly. The American stared at her, his own eyes narrow now.
Do you want to get off me, or would you rather I throw you all the way across the fucking room? It's your call, but make it quick.
Zoya slipped off the man,
then walked over to the bed and sat down. Court stood now, pulled his cargo shorts on, and stepped into the bedroom. He took a chair across from her and sat back down.
The Mont Blanc was positioned in my pack with the clip facing in and the lid just slightly loose. You put the clip back exactly right, but you tightened the lid. I noticed in Bangkok, just after I left you alone in the room. I removed the powder canister here the night before last.
He pulled it from his pocket and held it up between his thumb and forefinger. Zoya said,
"So much for trust."
Court replied with derision,
"Look who's talking."
She got up now, stormed past Court to the patio, then sat on a recliner by the pool. He followed her out. She put her head in her hands, and after a long time, she spoke.
"I'm sorry."
Court stood in the doorway.
"Yeah, me too. I put the blowgun back because I wanted to see if you would try to use it."
She pulled her head out of her hands and looked across the suite at him.
"I thought you were too good to be true."
"That's ridiculous."
"You don't know my life."
Court thought about it a moment, then crossed the patio and sat down in front of her.
"I think I do. Like you said last night, you and I have a lot in common. We've traveled down the same road, can't you see that? I see it. I see what you are up against now, and I was just trying to help."
"Why?"
Court looked out to sea. The massive yacht was still there, a brilliant white in the morning sun.
"I have my reasons."
"When you said you would talk to the CIA about taking me in, I thought you were trying to do to me what you were sent to do to Fan. Obviously, recruiting me would help your career. Why wouldn't you want that?"
"It won't do shit for my career because I'm not an employee of the CIA.
"Right. That's what everyone in CIA says."
"True. It's also what people who aren't in the CIA say. I'm one of those people."
Zoya wasn't buying it. Court could see it on her face.
"I do contract work for them, but only on my terms. I am getting paid for the Fawn assignment, but they only knew I would do it because of a personal reason."
"What personal reason?"
"If you'd managed to drug me, you'd already know, because I'd tell you everything."
Court stood.
"But since your plan failed, I am free to tell you that it's none of your fucking business."
Zoya rubbed tears from her eyes. Court stepped back into the room, grabbed his phone, and slid the Glock into his waistband, covering it with his t-shirt.
"I'm going out to make a phone call. If you want to go, you are free to go while I'm gone, or whenever the hell you want to. You are not a captive."
Court went to the door, but Zoya called to him.
"Wait."
He turned back to her, but said nothing. She said,
"I've betrayed your trust in me. Trust I did not deserve."
Court did not reply. She looked away.
"Tell your handler I will discuss the terms of my defection at her convenience."
He turned and left the room. 10 minutes later, Court sat at a table in an open-air restaurant between the resort's main swimming pool and the beach. A few guests sat at the nearby open-air bar, a few people were doing morning yoga on the beach, and the bartender was making an espresso for a sleepy elderly man in a sun hat reading a copy of the German magazine Der Spiegel. There were a few resort guests at the pool nearby, but Court's immediate area was clear. A few more guests, mostly families, lay on the sugary sand or splashed in the waters of the bay. In the distance, a helicopter took off from the big yacht that had arrived the night before, and then it flew off to the north. Court took out his phone and dialed Brewer's number, then gave the response to her identity challenge. As soon as his identity was confirmed, Court's CIA handler said,
"I've been waiting all damn day for you to call."
Court said,
"You'll forgive me when I tell you what I have for you. How would you like to recruit a new foreign asset and score a defection from a Tier 1 opposition intelligence service at the same time?"
Brewer was taken aback.
"What the hell are you talking about?"
"The female I told you about who is working with the Russians."
"What about her?"
"She's here with me in Phuket. She wants to defect and is willing to speak with you about terms."
Brewer was baffled by this.
"You flipped her?"
Court had never flipped anyone in his life. He wasn't a case officer. He didn't recruit and run agents. He said,
"No, not really. She's in a serious jam with Lubyanka, and they'll kill her if she goes back to Russia. I think she sees us as her only option.
Obviously, she possesses a lot of intel, considering her position in the SVR.
Okay, you've got me on the hook. Tell me what you know, but do it quickly because I have intel for you.
Court filled his handler in on Zoya Zakharova, but he left out the sex and the fact that she'd killed another operative, and he glossed over the fact that she'd attempted to drug him just minutes earlier. There was a lot to his short relationship with this woman, and it was all he could do to give a dispassionate accounting of what had happened without putting in his own spin. At the moment, he was pissed at her, and he had decided he wasn't going to let her breach Shamroon's estate with him when he jumped the fence. Court had his own trust issues, after all. Brewer took it all in, then said,
"Obviously we'd like to speak with her. I'll talk to Matt and see how he wants to proceed."
"Okay."
Brewer added, "And just for the record, you have my permission to pick up as many girls as you like while you are working, just as long as they are high-ranking intelligence officers from opposition first-tier agencies who wish to defect."
"Funny,"
Court said, and he wondered if he'd really given off the impression he'd entered into a relationship with Zoya, or if Brewer was just making a little quip. He pushed the thought away and said,
"As far as fun, I am operating on the assumption that the helicopter will arrive at some point, but it hasn't happened yet. I've been around the periphery of the estate, but I was waiting till tonight to breach."
"You can cancel your plans."
"Why would I do that?"
"Because Fan Xiang managed to send a coded message to the U.S. ambassador to Thailand. He's asking for us to rescue him."
Court couldn't believe it.
"When did this happen?"
"Our ambassador just got it 2 hours ago, but it was sent 10.5 hours ago. It got scooped up into a spam folder because it was literally a piece of spam. But somehow the ambassador's secretary found it. Fan says he doesn't know where he's being held, but we were able to use data from the email to pinpoint a cell phone tower that was used to send the message. It's located adjacent to the Shamroon estate there in Phuket, which means Fan is already there."
Court knew he couldn't have missed the helicopter arriving, but perhaps Natapong Shamroon had been wrong about that indicator of Fan and Kulop's presence. Maybe Fan came overland, arrived by boat, or even got here before Court and Zoya arrived. He asked,
"How do you know the email actually came from Fan?"
"He gave specific information only he would have known about his escape from China,"
Brewer said.
"Ground Branch is spinning up right now. They are arranging the helicopters, and they will hit the estate around 1 a.m.
Court didn't like it.
"That's not a good idea. Let me get in there. It's a big building, jungle all around. I can try to pinpoint where they are holding Fan, and then..."
"Negative. We've lost him so many times in the past 2 weeks already. If you go in there early and are detected, he'll be long gone before the operators hit. Either Shamroon will move him, or the Chinese will find them."
"The Chinese don't even know about Phuket."
"That can change at any time."
Court wasn't happy about Brewer's decision, but he saw no way to stop her from sending in Ground Branch.
"I'll stay on the outside of the compound, but I'll try to get a better fix on his location. I don't trust your intel."
Brewer said,
"Nothing wrong with the intelligence that ID'd Fan's location, although I have to say I'm disappointed in the human intelligence asset who picked himself up a Russian girlfriend and is now probably hanging around in his hotel room with no pants on, instead of working to acquire his target."
Court's jaw muscles flexed. He took a few breaths before responding, then said,
"I'll find where they are keeping Fan if he's here."
Brewer said, "No, you will not. You will check out of your hotel and start heading back to Bangkok by midnight. I can't have you anywhere near the area when the raid comes. Call me back when you are on the road, and by then I'll have instructions for how to proceed with Ms. Zakharova. She is your objective now. Let Ground Branch handle Fan Xiang. That op is over for you."
The call ended there. Court didn't like it, of course, but he could make no reasonable excuse to Brewer as to why he had to be the one to rescue Fan. It seemed to him that at every turn, the one insurmountable hurdle in his own plan for this operation was finding a way to save Donald Fitzroy from Colonel Dai. He owed Fitzroy, and he knew he was Fitzroy's only hope, but it continued to look like saving the life of the Englishman was going to be a bridge too far. The old man had already had 2 fingers lopped off, but by this time tomorrow, he'd probably be in a shallow grave in the hills over Hong Kong. Court thought about all this as he climbed the stairs back to the villa, along with the 100 other things running through his mind.
The fact that CIA paramilitaries were just hours away from hitting the property east of him and either finding a dry hole, which would be bad, or picking up Fan Xiang, which would be worse for Sir Donald. Court unlocked the door to his Ocean View suite, walked through the small entryway, and entered the sitting room there. He was surprised to see Zoya sitting on the sofa across from him, especially so because her hair was wet and she wore only a towel. He had stepped fully into the living room now, passing a wall behind him on his left, and as he did so, he focused on Zoya, saw her back ramrod straight, her eyes focused on him, but apprehensive, nervous. Court sensed danger, close and immediate. He turned his next footfall into a forward roll by lowering his left shoulder and pushing off with his right leg. As he went down to the ground, his right hand slipped under his t-shirt and formed around the grip of his Glock jutting there from the waistband of his cargo shorts. He rolled over on the carpet and came up in a crouch, his pistol out in front of him and pointing back towards the blind spot in the room he'd just passed. Four Asian men stood there along the wall. They had pistols of their own pointed back his way. A voice came from the bedroom on Court's right, English, with a heavy Chinese accent.
"Try it. I welcome the opportunity to have you shot right here."
Court turned to look into the bedroom. Three more men stood there. Two held small submachine guns out at hip level, and the third was clearly in charge. This was obvious simply from his body language. He stood there in a suit and tie, his hands clasped behind his back. Court recognized the man. He was Major Shi, Colonel Dai's second in command. He said,
"Engage those four men, so these two men will shoot you down, and then shoot your attractive friend here as well."
Court lowered the Glock, placed it on the floor, and pushed it towards the four men in front of him. As he did this, he addressed the one man in the suite he knew spoke English.
"I don't guess you guys are just here to work on your tans."
Shi didn't laugh. He said,
"We will take you to see Dai."
Court shook his head.
"We can't go to Hong Kong. Fan is here."
The man smiled.
"The colonel is not in Hong Kong. He is here in Phuket. We will take you to him now."
Court turned back to Zoya, and her expression was clear. "What the hell is going on? Who the hell is Colonel Dai? And why did you lie to me?" Court found her ability to ask three questions with just a glare impressive, if a little disconcerting. Court turned back to Major Shi.
"I'll go, but she stays here. She's not part of this."
"Then you shouldn't have brought her here. You aren't in a position to dictate anything to me, Mr. Gentry. She is coming with us."
Court cringed at the sound of his own name. To Zoya, Major Shi said,
"Get dressed."
She stood from the sofa, and as she walked past Court in the living room to get her clothes from the closet, Court whispered to her,
"I can explain."
She did not break stride.
"I can hardly wait."
Chapter 51. After Zoya Zakharova, dressed in dark blue warm-ups and tennis shoes, she and Court were shoved into the back of an SUV and driven up into the hills of the northeast of the resort, with a second SUV full of Chinese operatives trailing behind. Court and Zoya were not hooded or blindfolded, which they appreciated, but men sat on either side of them, and both held pistols jammed into the ribs of their captives. Every bump in the exceedingly bumpy road made Court hold his breath, as the asshole on his right knocked the barrel of his weapon right into Court's right side, where he'd been shot the previous month. Court could see that Zoya was equally stressed about the jackass on her left with his gun banging into her side as the SUV bounced along. Court had been frisked by the Chinese, but they'd missed the tiny vial of scopolamine hydrobromide in his left cargo pocket. He'd done nothing special to conceal it, but it was only an inch long, and the man searching him had squeezed the pocket and found Court's phone, and then moved on to check the other pockets. It wasn't that Court particularly needed a central nervous system depressant at the moment, but he would keep its presence on his body at the back of his mind. After less than a 10-minute drive, the two SUVs pulled off the paved rural road and took a gravel drive through a gate opened by two Chinese men in their 20s. This winding drive led to the south, up a steep incline, and ended at a ranch-style home with sweeping views of the ocean. The door next to Court was opened by another young Chinese man in plain clothes.
He and Zoya were directed to go straight into the front door of the home. Near the entrance to the ranch house, yet another pair of Chinese men dressed in casual wear stood, trying, Court decided, not to look like security officers. He could see the pistols under the men's white shirts and linen pants, and the earpieces in their ears, so they failed in this endeavor, but Court imagined these were Dai's men, from the People's Liberation Army, and playing the role of civilian wasn't really an